We have covered the shamatha part. Now it's time to speak about the vipassana part. Today is special because it is the first day, and I want you before the interview to get some picture. Then we will study. We have requested Sarah to print the text, and we will study in the evening the text, and in the morning we will continue the practical aspects of this practice, so that you get a better and better picture. So we have mentioned this anapana sati practice has six steps in the northern tradition, eight steps in the Theravada tradition, but actually it boils down also to the six steps. We have covered the three or four steps concerned with the shamatha practice. And the explanation would not be complete without explaining the steps concerned with the vipassana practice. So it is very important also to understand that same principle, at least so it is explained in the Chinese tradition. You have the practice and you have witnessing. When you witness, you go to the next step. So first you learn step by step, it is done in Theravada. When you have the whole picture, then you can use any step to make a breakthrough. Then you combine also the shamatha and the vipassana, because you get a complete picture. It comes to the same principle. You can best combine shamatha and vipassana only when you have a complete picture. If you don't have the complete picture, still you separate between the shamatha and the vipassana. So the first step in the vipassana practice is called investigation. Kwan, avekshana. This step means, we will study the text, it means you understand thoroughly the objects of wisdom. In Buddhist traditions you have many different views. The Yogacara, we will maybe talk about it some other time. I don't want to get you involved in all kinds of concepts and theories. This is my job, in a way, teaching them. So in Yogacara you have two traditions. One is based on the alaya concept, the concept of the store consciousness, you may have heard of it. It is a similar concept like bhavanga, you may have heard. Bhavanga is the concept or reality which explains the continuity. Alaya is a similar concept. Because Buddhism is the study of impermanence, and impermanence is arising and dissolution in each and every moment. So how do you explain continuity? So this continuity is explained in different Buddhist traditions by different concepts. In Theravada, they use the bhavanga concept. Bhavanga means anga, you can understand as a cause. And bhava means existence. This base consciousness is the cause of existence. It is a consciousness which arises when we are born and which disappears to appear in a different body when we die. So it is a consciousness which with which we start the new life when we are born in the womb of the next mother. Or who knows where we will be born. There are many possibilities. When we die, this consciousness, if there are causes for that, because there are always causes and conditions, this is how the world develops, how the world works. When there are causes and conditions for further continuity, so this bhavanga consciousness, this cause of existence, again goes to the next life. So the beginning is this bhavanga, the end is bhavanga. The same in the Yogacara tradition, they use the name Alaya. This is a very wonderful name. Alaya, actually, when you study Buddhism, this is one of the most important concepts of Buddhism. Alaya is from the root li, which means to stick. And the alaya, like Himalaya, we all know Himalaya, is the snow sticks to the Himalaya mountains. So similarly, this consciousness which is responsible for continuity is a consciousness which sticks. That consciousness which sticks is the consciousness with which we are born and with which we die. And this consciousness, we will talk about it maybe later if you're interested. This is my subject in a way. This consciousness is, according to this school of Yogacara based on Alaya, is the consciousness which actually preserves the seeds of everything that we experience. So the seeds of whatever we experience is stored in that consciousness. So that means what we actually experience is based on this consciousness. So its meaning is further expanded. That means this Yogacara school is called also mind only. So actually what we experience is only mind, nothing else. Because the objects of the mind are just seeds in our consciousness. So, like a mirror, you have we were talking this morning about the Patibhaga Nimitta, reflected image. Hmm? So to explain, we will talk about it maybe later. Similarly, actually all that we experience are the images in the mirror. The mirror is of course a mind, and these images, according to this philosophy, they are just like the reflections in the mirror. They are not of the different nature than the mirror itself. It is the same. Hmm? But we take it to being, to be something different from the mirror. But actually, what we see in the mirror is just the same thing as the mirror itself. Hmm? Not different. So, on this principle also, you have the idea that everything we experience is just reflections in the this alaya consciousness. Why am I saying that? It will enable us to understand better this technique of meditation on the breath and the implications of it. Then you have, I have already mentioned, there are two types of yogacaras. Then you have yogacara based on the idea of the Buddha nature. Huh? That means idea of the Tathagata Garbha, the womb of the Tathagata, which is the seat of enlightenment, seat of Buddhahood, covered by ignorance in the heart of each and every being. Hmm? This is the very important Zen concept, and this is also actually what you will find as a base for tantric practice. Now for us, at least for me, this alaya consciousness school is very interesting because it combines the analytical approach that you will find in Theravada with the non-analytical approach of the other Mahayana schools. So it is kind of a bridge between these two approaches and combination of the two. And this is very useful because in order to have deep understanding of Buddhism, we have to study the analytical knowledge and we have to study the non-analytical knowledge also. These two aspects, they are complementary. And this is best explained in this Yogacara tradition based on alaya. The alaya is a skillful means for explaining this clearly. When we understand the mind, we understand everything. Everything is only reflection in the mind. So, back to Vipassana, the text we are dealing with, I will talk about it in the evening, belongs to the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra of Maitreya or Asanga. Maitreya according to the Chinese tradition, Asanga according to the Buddhist, to the Tibetan tradition. It doesn't really matter. They may have been the same person. And this text is very important, maybe the most important text on meditation in the whole of Buddhist literature, because it combines the explanation of the Bodhisattva path with the explanation of the path of the disciples. And the whole book, except just one chapter, the Bodhisattva Bhumi, the explaining the practice of the Bodhisattvas, is practically mostly based on the understanding of the Shravakas. So the understanding of the Shravakas is the base. It is without this base we cannot study any Buddhism. And this is most clearly explained in this Yogacara tradition. Normally, these analyses of our experience, analytical analysis of our experience, is studied in the northern tradition only scholarly, not in meditation. But in this tradition, it is like in Theravada, you go to the study through meditation. And the idea of the discipline of the disciples is that wisdom is precisely only through the analytical wisdom. There is a saying in Abhidharma Kosha, Dharma pravichaya antarena nasti klesha prahana, nasti klesha prahana upaya. There is no other means for abandoning the defilements than dharma pravichaya, or dhamma vichaya as it is called in Pali. That means analysis of the dharmas. Analysis of the dharmas is analysis of what we have explained in the morning, of these objects of wisdom. In order to get realization, we have to understand the objects of wisdom. In the tradition of the Shravakas, you have to understand them by meditation, by vipassana. Namely, you have to understand their own characteristic, svabhava, and their common characteristic, samanya, that means their vishesha lakshana, their special characteristics, and their common characteristics. You may have heard about all this, but it's nice to repeat it, because this will give you a deeper picture of what we are doing. What means a special characteristic? Special characteristic is that characteristic which the objects of our experience are always changing. The real nature of this object remains. In the words, in the explanation of Abhidharma Kosha, which is more or less the same, you cannot break these qualities by hand, you cannot break them by logic. We can burn this table. So wherever there is a form, there will be hardness. The hardness as a special characteristic of the earth will not change. Even so, the table, which is, when you touch it, is maybe characterized by hardness, because my hand is soft, I feel it as hardness. If I was warm, maybe I would feel it as softness. All this is relative. But this hardness being the quality of the earth, you cannot change. Therefore, it is a special characteristic of earth. Similarly, when we have sensation, there is a reception of the object as being pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, it doesn't matter. But this reception of the object is the special quality of the sensation. Wherever there is sensation, there must be a reception of the object. This quality cannot change. Wherever there is mind, there must be sensation. When there is sensation, there is a reception of the object as pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So this is the special characteristic of the sensation. And similarly, all the dharmas that really exist, they must have special characteristics which remain. This table we can burn, and it won't be table anymore. Therefore, it is a concept. Man also, we die and we are not there anymore. But these constituent parts, whenever there is a man, they will be there. And they have the real characteristics which will remain. But the man will disappear, the woman will disappear, animal will disappear, the tree will disappear. But the special characteristic will remain. Therefore, they are, in the Buddhist tradition, they are called vastu or vatu in Pali. That means they are the real basis for our experience. A table is there, but it is not the real base for our experience, because when we analyze it, it will disintegrate into many, many qualities. So this is observation. When you analyze the objects of experience in terms of the special characteristics, then you will also understand them in terms of the common characteristics. And the common characteristics of all the objects is precisely the impermanence, the unsatisfactory nature of impermanence, which is called dukkha. Then in the northern tradition, the non-impossibility of the being the ruler over that which is impermanent and has a nature of sorrow, that is called emptiness. And then the selflessness of that which is empty of the self. This would be in northern tradition. In the southern tradition, you have selflessness and impure. So four characteristics. Whatever has qualities that we can grasp must be impermanent. Impermanence does not give a lasting satisfaction, that is dukkha. Dukkha is usually translated as suffering or pain, but this is only one aspect of the dukkha. Dukkha should not be translated really as pain. Literally in Sanskrit, kha means sky. Du means a bad sky. Where there is impermanence, we are in the bad sky. Sukha means a good sky. So ultimate, what is nirvana? The ultimate sukha. Ultimate good sky. The non-changing sky. That's why in the northern tradition, the space is also the non-created. Like nirvana. So, investigation means investigating those objects of wisdom in terms of the special characteristics and the common characteristics. What are the objects of wisdom? We will have them in our text. They are the five aggregates. In our text you don't have the inner and outer spheres and the 18 elements, but they are included in the five aggregates, because the five aggregates are six inner and outer bases and also the 18 elements. And especially the 18 elements, when we speak of elements, dhatu, dhatu has a meaning of non-self. When we see dhatu, we don't see the self. When we see the self, we don't see the dhatu. So, when you see these, then you understand dependent origination. So, in our text, after the analysis of the five aggregates on the base of the breath, you have the analysis of the dependent origination on the base of the breath. when you understand dependent origination, what is the essence of dependent origination? The cause and effect is momentary. This is a real dependent origination. It is not just that when we are born, we will surely grow old, we will surely have sickness and we will die. This is only conventional truth. But in fact, whatever arises, passes practically at the same moment. This is the real nature of dependent origination. That's why I have explained the Susima Sutta in the morning. In order to be liberated, you have to understand everything. First, sabam anabhijanam, everything in terms of the special characteristics. Then everything aparijanam, knowing through in terms of the common characteristics. Then you will, only when you know everything in terms of special characteristics and common characteristics, you will be able to practice viraga, letting go. Unless we understand everything in terms of the common characteristics, impermanence, we won't let go. So when you let go, you can abandon. And when you abandon, you are open to the other dimension, to the dimension of the ungraspable. This we will find also in the text. So this is a meaning of investigation. This first step of vipassana is investigation. When you study the Theravada system, you have three parinyas in the Visuddhimagga. Jnata parinya, which means knowledge of the objects of wisdom, which we have enumerated in our text of the five aggregates, dependent origination, four noble truths. These are the objects of wisdom. When we know the objects of wisdom, then tirana parinya. Tirana means also investigation. Investigation of arising and passing away moment by moment. When you investigate in terms of arising and passing away moment by moment, then you can let go, viraga. When you let go, you can abandon. Abandon means detach, actually. So this also, you can go through all this process. When you abandon, you are liberated. The world becomes emptiness. The body and mind becomes emptiness. Nothing to grasp. So, in terms of our meditation on the breath, first you have investigation. Investigation means understanding these objects of wisdom in terms of special characteristics. Then you have tirana parinya, understanding them in terms of the common characteristics, their impermanence. Then the next step, this is investigation, is vivartana, vivartana in Pali, that means turning away. When you have investigated in this way, you turn away from grasping at these objects of experience. This means turning away. when you can turn away vivartana, then the next step is shuddhi. Shuddhi means purity. That means abandoning grasping for this body and mind, which is our existence. Now, we are not liberated because we are still grasping to the objects of our experience. But the way not to grasp is, in the Visuddhimagga, it's described as 7 vipassanas. They become 18 vipassanas, they can become many, many vipassanas. First, anicca, the impermanence, then dukkha, the sorrowful nature of impermanence, then anatta, the selfless nature of impermanence, we are not masters of this impermanence. Then nibbida, very difficult word to translate. I use a bhikkhu's body translation. Bhikkhu body is a specially intelligent translator. He calls it disenchantment. The former translators, they called it disgust. But disgust is not necessarily a positive quality. But disenchantment is a very positive thing. We cannot attain deep experience in meditation until we are disenchanted. Until we are disenchanted because we have what? Samvega. A very important word in meditation. Samvega, we are shattered. We are shattered by this state of things. By the unsatisfactory nature of impermanence. Then one can get disenchantment from the world, because the world is only impermanence. There is not an atom in the world which is not impermanent. Then, after disenchantment, you have viraga. The vi has a deprivative meaning, letting go the raga. Raga literally means in Sanskrit being colored by the object, from ranch. Sanskrit is a very, very fascinating language. It has such a subtle qualities of expression we can't really translate. So raga means we are colored by the object because we want it or because we reject it. And you can only practice viraga, letting go this desire for the object, because rejection of the object is also based on desire of the object. Then, when you have viraga, when you are not colored by the object, then you are free. This is very important. Then you can let go, which is called abandoning, prahana. So, then comes the third stage, after turning away, that means after practicing the nibbida, disenchantment, and after practicing the viraga, not being colored by the object, then shuddhi, purity. And in the Theravada tradition, after this shuddhi, purity, you still have the visuddhi, jnana, the knowledge of the purity. But in northern tradition, only 3 steps, but it comes practically to the same. When you have purity, you have also knowledge of the purity. So these are these steps in the practice of shamatha, when you and vipassana. When you practice vipassana based on the breath, how will you practice? You use differentiating mind. When you practice shamatha, you emphasize your job is to stay with the same image. When you practice vipassana, you change the image according to your need. So you go from one object into the other and study this object by analyzing their, as we have explained, their special and common characteristics. This is vipassana. So in shamatha you stay with the same image, in vipassana you are based on wisdom. That's why vipassana here, v means not deprivative, but it means differentiate. You are seeing by differentiation. Seeing by differentiation is the wisdom. In the Buddhist tradition, vipassana and wisdom is the same thing, same word, same meaning. When you have wisdom, you differentiate through wisdom. That means you differentiate with clear awareness. So also awareness is another synonym of vipassana. So vipassana means awareness, vipassana means wisdom, vipassana means seeing by differentiation, differentiating by wisdom. Differentiating what? In the analytical way, differentiating the vastu, the real basis for our experience. That means a basis which have real own characteristics and common characteristics. And by this differentiation, you then go deeper and deeper into understanding of the disenchantment, letting go, and abandoning. Then comes the purity. So these are the seven vipassanas. You can expand them into many, many different vipassanas. But these are the seven basic vipassanas that you go through in order to get the shuddhi, in order to get the purity. And purity is the aim of the Buddhist practice, no matter whether we study whatever skillful means. Buddhism is especially interesting. Why? Because this is more emphasized in the northern tradition. All the dharmas are actually only skillful means. Ultimately, all skillful means have to be abandoned. But in order to abandon the skillful means, you have to know how to use them for liberation. If you abandon them without using them, then you will not get anywhere. This is actually what makes Buddhism so fascinating, because the ultimate reality is the that which you cannot grasp. If you grasp it, it cannot be the ultimate reality. So this dharma is only skillful means for non-grasping. And the non-grasping is the ultimate reality. We got these steps in the vipassana. Now on the base of the breath, how you do. Well, very simple. Again, you start with the breath as the breath are the four elements. The four elements, they have all their own characteristics. These characteristics are changing. When you pay attention to the breath in one place, you will see that you experience the breath sometimes as hardness, sometimes as softness, sometimes as smoothness, sometimes as roughness, sometimes as flowing, sometimes as the heat, sometimes as coolness, sometimes as vibration, sometimes as a pushing sensation. All these qualities, they are always in the process of the change when you focus on them. And the same, these qualities are in the body. When you identify them in the breath, you can identify them in the body. Then you can investigate the impermanence of the body. When you investigate impermanence of the body, then you can investigate the impermanence of the sensations. When you investigate impermanence of sensation, you investigate the impermanence of the mind, which is governed by the sensations. And then you can put everything together, the mental objects. Here are the dharmas, and mental objects is everything. So everything is in the process of the change. So through studying the Dhamma Anupassana, you get the picture of everything as a change. So in our 16 exercises, which we will go through, you have the four exercises connected with the wise seeing. We can translate Anupassana as a wise seeing, or the insight into the body. Then when you have insight into the body, you can get insight into the sensations, because the sensations are based on the body. When you get insight into the sensations, you get insight into the mind, which is governed by sensations. And when you have insight into the mind, then you can put all things together and observe all in terms of impermanence and go into these seven vipassanas, to go through this process of observing, turning away, and purity, and the knowledge of purity. So basically, this is how it is explained. And this is how it is explained in the analytical tradition, emphasizing the Dharma Pravichaya or Dhamma Vichaya, the analysis of the Dhammas. Dhammas here means that which has the real characteristics. And with the objects which are like concepts, according to Buddhism, even the being is a concept, the table is a concept, the house is a concept, because you can analyze it. These real characteristics break the solidity of the concepts. What we are actually attached to is not the reality, but it is the concepts of the reality that we make. This is very important. So our attachment is to the concepts rather than to the reality. When we understand the reality, this is a way how to enter into the process of detachment from the concepts. So you start with the investigation of the body, which then in analytical analysis are just the four elements and what is derived from the four elements. Then these are the objects, real objects of sensations. Then sensations are also just like the elements, the process of change. When the sensations we see as a process of change, we see the mind as a process of change, because the mind is principally concerned, worldly mind is concerned with running after the sensations. Through the sensations we differentiate what we like, what we don't like, what we want, what we don't want. And most of our thinking is concerned with that. What we like, what we don't like, what we want, what we don't want. When we investigate our thought, it's all about this. And then, put everything together, the Dhamma Anupassana makes the whole picture. You need the whole picture, as we have explained, in order to liberate from everything. So there is a, in the Samyutta Nikaya, a wonderful sutta, the devata wants to attain the end of the world because he has great supernatural powers by running to the end of the world. Nowadays the science is trying to do the same. So the Buddha tells him, you cannot attain the end of the world by running, but unless you have reached the end of the world, you cannot get liberated. So how do you attain the end of the world? By understanding that the world cannot be reached. What we actually reach mostly is the concepts of the world, not the world itself. So this brings us to what we have said in the beginning. Sunyam lokam avekasu mogarajas sadasato evam lokam avekantam machu raja napasati. See, you moga raja, the world as emptiness. When you can observe the world as emptiness, the lord of the death cannot see you. And how to observe the world as emptiness? This in the meditation of the disciples, it is by this analysis, by observing own and common characteristics, then seeing through them, then you can get disenchanted, then you won't be colored by them in terms of grasping and rejection. And then you can abandon. Abandoning does not mean that you leave something, but abandoning means that you do not grasp. And this non-grasping at anything, this is called the shuddhi, the purity. So we have a job to do, but this purity can be attained also, and this is emphasized in the northern tradition, by understanding the nature of the mind, by understanding what the northern tradition calls the natural nirvana. How to attain the natural nirvana? Giving rise to the mind without holding. This is the method of investigation in the northern tradition, in the Bodhisattva tradition. They can be very well combined. Because of this method, in the northern tradition, we do not emphasize the analytical approach, but they study it, so to say, by concepts. Having studied by concepts, then they concentrate on this letting go of the thoughts. And this is how you can obtain purity also. So you can start from the beginning. You can also start from the end. Beginning and the end, they can very well combine together. Then we have the complete picture. The beginning, emphasizing the beginning, is the method of the Shravakas, of the disciples. Emphasizing the end is the method of the Bodhisattvas. Through understanding the end, you give rise to the great compassion for those who cannot understand this end. So even you have not realized it, you get a very clear concept of that. This is a northern tradition. You have the logic of that. Northern tradition emphasizes especially the logic. And seeing very clearly how the arahat sees the world, but yet not becoming an arahat. So this is called the practice of non-attaining. We chant in the evening the Heart Sutra. It speaks of non-attaining. This is the skillful means of the practice. You analyze also, this is very important, especially in Yogacara tradition. You see the impermanence, you see the arising and passing moment by moment, but you don't attain. So this non-attaining is the natural state. And how you practice non-attaining? Not preventing the arising of the thoughts, but observing this arising of the thoughts as itself being no different from the ultimate emptiness. This is the meaning of the Heart Sutra that we are reciting in the evening, and we will talk about it more when we recite it. So for now we stop here, and we make 20 minutes break, and we start at 3:15 sitting, and we have 2 sessions. Okay, only two more.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.